Now, here's Dave Pezzo on KITO Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, of course, and our special guest today is with HH and Associates. It's David, and would you say it's Hutchison?
Hutchison.
Hutchison.
Yes.
I always want to go Hutch. Yeah. Anyway, David, thanks for coming in today and letting us know.
You bet.
A little bit about taxes, because we're, as you all know, H&H is a sponsor of our program, so I obviously know David, but they're, instead of just kind of doing taxes here at the, when we come around to April 15th, we put our stuff together, and then what do we do about taxes? Well, it's pretty much too late. I mean, you can do some IRA things, and I'm sure you'll have some other stuff for us, but the reality is this is the best time of the year, is the end of the year, to be thinking about what to do. Isn't that right?
Yeah, Dave. I think right now is the time we need to sit down and reevaluate our cash flow needs for upcoming, if we think we owe taxes, or thankfully maybe we're getting a refund, we just don't know. But there's some things at year end that we can do. We want to take a look at, maybe to visit your tax advisor or professional, depending upon who you use. But there are things you can take a look at. I'd probably start with like your typical state prepay. As you get later in the year, it gets harder to move cash around to do other things. But a state prepay, if you itemize deductions, might be something you want to take a look at, because economically, you're going to pay the tax in April anyway.
Yeah, but what you're saying is you're paying the tax. You want to pay the taxes this year that you owe to the state, or anticipate, or part of it.
Correct. Yeah, and that's looking, if you prepay it by December 31st, you may be able to qualify that as a federal deduction on your itemized deductions. At which case, though, there is a caveat that you might end up on what they call alternative minimum tax. Which means there's no benefit to do
it. That happened to me, actually, didn't it?
Yeah. So yes. It's one of those kickers that it does take a professional to run the numbers, because it's a complicated calculation, but it's something that maybe you'd want to take a look at before year end. An example would be, if you're in a 25% marginal bracket, it's a $10,000 state tax prepay. That's $2,500 overall tax savings on the federal side.
Right. Well, good point. And if you do that at the end of the year, you can shove it into this year. Now, would you still get that credit? It would just be a year delayed, though. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
And again, it's a timing. Economically, you got to spend it. It's just a timing issue, whether it's done by 12/31 or of this year, or if it's done by April of the next year.
Got it. Okay. Now, you and I have talked about this before, with how little people fully understand or appreciate charitable giving. I mean, lots of people do things charitably. Certainly I do, but I don't do large checks. I give away appreciated
assets,
typically stock, for example, that's appreciated a lot. Can you explain to everybody why that's important, and what we're looking at as we think about gifts at the end of the year that are more than, you know, $100 to a local charity?
Well, why it's important is that it's twofold. It avoids having to recognize that potential long-term capital gain, which is additional income and taxes to you. But if you give it to a charity, the interesting component of the tax law is you get a fair market value deduction, not a cost basis deduction.
Right.
So in theory, if I inherited or bought stock more than 12 months and one day ago, creating long-term capital gain, I bought it for $1, but it went up to $10,000 a share. When I donated to that charity, I get a $10,000 donation deduction versus $1.
Right.
That's a benefit on your side. For the charity, they're a 501c3 nonprofit. They can sell the stock, get the $10,000, and use it in their charity.
Good point. Now, that's one that's not used a lot. We find that frustrating. Why don't more people know about that? We see sometimes when we're talking with clients, and they may have had some Procter & Gamble stock that's been held for 30 years. It has a basis of, you know, 1/20th of what the stock sells for today.
Right.
Perfect to give it away. and not have to pay capital gains. Why isn't this better known?
Dave, to be honest with you, I think it's the relationships out there in the public accounting industry, as well as maybe even the financial advisement industry. I work as a team member, mm-hmm. so and you know from personal experience how I kind of work with that. But it's communicating, it's working as a team to make sure that your clients are well taken care of. And that's one of our deals at HH is we want to make sure that we take care of your needs, we problem solve, mm-hmm. we listen to you, and we communicate with your other advisors because we're not experts in everything.
Right.
And so to have that communication is vital, and I think everybody that has a financial advisor and a tax advisor should connect them up, and they should discuss that prior to year end. I think that's why it's overlooked.
It just is. Would it be fair to say, and again, not throwing the whole accounting industry under the bus, because obviously that's not you or your firm, but is it fair to say that by and large it's mostly reactive rather than proactive? Here's my taxes, and then you fill it, and you have somebody in the office, puts it into the computer software, and then it spits it out. Here you go, and here's your bill, and they go.
That's a great point, Dave, because, again, there are different levels. So when you go to look at a tax advisor, there are some that are just compliant-driven, and that's kind of where you're going with this. There are different firms out there that do different things. Our firm is to be proactive. It's to do the planning. You already know what your tax liability is and what's going to happen before it happens. Mm-hmm. And so you can plan and use your cash accordingly on how you want to use it and how you want to spend it. But there are compliance. I mean, typically, and H&R Block, Jackson Hewitt, those are compliant-type services. They're just going to take what you give them, put it on a return, here's your results. They don't typically go any further than that. I'm not going to say all of them don't, but most of them.
Right, right. Well, we've seen it actually in the accounting industry too, which is disappointing, where they don't. And so,
right.
But I think that's a fair point. You depending on what your situation is, meaning what your income is, and what your assets are, probably dictates what kind of a firm you should be going to. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. And we try to go through that expectation setting when we meet with somebody. Mm. We try to differentiate and say, whether they really need our services or not. Now, we're more than happy to help them resolve their issues or questions and so forth, which is typically why I give at least the first consultation for free, because I don't know what that need is. And I help them identify that need and why.
Right, right.
So,
right.
Yeah, we do go through their returns. We do go through their level and whether or not they really need to have somebody looking at things like that for them.
That's a good point. So not everybody needs a CPA, do they, or a consulting type?
No, there are little tidbits out there that can help everybody, which we can talk about a little bit, like in Idaho. But typically, if we're talking small business, maybe a little higher net worth, I'm not going to say it's, $100,000 a year, because we have clients that have been with us for years that the reason why they don't have such a large tax return anymore as far as taxability is
right.
Because we planned accordingly to make that happen.
Good, good. Okay. Now, that's, I get my K-1s late in the year, so I recently filed.
Sure.
And this year, because I had a couple of business relationships that were dissolved, my tax return was actually less, but I measured it, actually. It's an inch and a half high. It's a book. It's 400 pages. That, obviously, software is the only way we could do that today, right? I mean, nobody could know all these rules and file in all these states. It would be a nightmare.
It would be.
But is this, I couldn't help, but I got this, and I still walk around with it just because I'm trying to convince my office to let me make a statement with this, on Facebook or whatever. And they're like, no, we can't do that. You don't do that because this tax reform thing is going to be a political issue to people. But I don't understand, honestly, why it would be, if you're on the left, the tax reform, just because the guy on the right happens to be the one that introduces it. I mean, they had 8 years to do it, and nobody approached it. Everybody says they want tax reform, but we never get there. So when we come into our next segment, I want to talk a little bit about what you think the possibilities are. We'll circle back to some more year-end tax questions. But this is, you know, an inch and a half, is that reasonable? Inch and a half? Come on. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, more with Dave Hutchison with HH & Associates. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, of course, and I'm here with Dave Hutchison with HH & Associates, who are accountants, but a little bit more than that. We'll get back to that, some of that consulting stuff that you do a little bit later, because that to me is interesting and maybe where we're hopefully, if we can have some kind of tax reform. But what I want to do is shift a little bit here and talk a little bit about the possibility of tax reform, or probability, if you will, what that might look like, or is it too early to kind of see all that?
Dave, I think it's too early to see all that. And the reason being is there's just too many components to get over. We have, as we all know, a cluster that nobody is really addressing everybody else's issues. The president, whether you like him or not, is trying to instigate it. He's trying to pull on all avenues. But as far as you know, tax reform, he's really pressing on it. He's put something out there. He wants Congress to act. Mm-hmm. He can't do it himself.
No.
And so right now, there what I see out there is there's a lot, like probably three or four major hurdles for anything to get done. So when we start talking about, are we going to shift to three different brackets? Are we going to bring down the corporate rate? Are we going to be able to shift down the individual rates? Everybody has a stick in the fight, so to speak, at every state, and there's so many different angles coming in right now. It's a crystal ball what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Will it happen? It needs to. I think we're all in agreement. We need to have reform, but it has to be reform and not tax cuts. And mm-hmm. what I mean by that is we have to go back to the Reagan era. Reagan was bold enough to pull that off, do a real true 1986 Tax Reform Act. We haven't had anything major like that since. It's very difficult to do. It's hard for people to see that growing the tax base is what we need to do, that's going to help and create jobs and create the tax base that we need to pay on our deficits and debts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, to be honest with you, I think you'd have to have a crystal ball to know what's going to happen. So I watch the articles, I read them, and I'm formerly on social media quite a bit, mostly LinkedIn on article reading mm-hmm. and keeping up with the latest issues, and I try to post good articles that I think are relevant, but there's just too many ifs, ands, or buts out there right now.
Do you think that from what you've heard, and of course I'm sure the CPAs are in there big time trying to figure out what's going on, what are your lobbyists, if you will, coming back with? Are they going to be able to come to some consensus? Because this is, from the outside looking in, this is one of the easiest things they should be able to accomplish. I understand that no matter what, the Democrats hate Donald Trump and want him to fail on, they hate all Republicans. They want them to fail on everything they did. Even if it was, we promise sunshine and roses every day, then that would be a bad idea. But they still have the House and the Senate. Why couldn't we get something? Or do you think those do your lobbyists think the constituencies that are in there, say in the blue states where you have one or two Republicans, is it that big a deal for, say, state taxes to be deductible?
Yes, I think you have each state has its issues, right? You, mm-hmm. If you look out there today, each state's trying to figure out how to tax internet sales,
right?
So you know there's some problem. Healthcare, the rising costs there to each state dictates how they're going to be able to tax their citizens. So when you're trying to bring that up, if they can't get a state income tax deduction, that infringes upon what we call the middle class, because that's typically who gets pressed the most on that. So then you have to start looking at all the different left, right, extremists, liberals, both sides. I'm not picking a side here. You can pick a side. But they all have their agenda. You got Rand Paul, who's very, you know, over here saying, I'm not going to vote for this. You got McConnell, who's in there saying, well, if it has to be this way. You got Nancy Pelosi over here saying, no, I'm not going to go. The way I look at it is, I think President Trump's right. I don't know that I'd call it a swamp or sewer, but these guys have to get, and gals have to get together, and they have to come to a consensus, and they have to give and take. That compromise has to happen, but I have not seen it either. I'm looking at the same things you are. I watch the same news you do. I try to sort through it. And a lot of times it just doesn't make sense to me that they let it go this far.
Right, right. And both houses have had, I mean, you know, the Democrats have had fully had the Congress and Senate, a newly elected popular president, and they didn't do anything with it. So it's not like anybody seems to want to move on this. Which is incredible. We're one of the highest tech, for example, in the corporate profit. No wonder jobs go overseas. They have to go overseas to be competitive in the world.
And they do. And when you, and I'll step back and even pull out Senator McCain, who, you know, I respect totally, but he was even on the bandwagon of change. And let's fix the health care system. But then all of a sudden we don't have it.
He won't
pull back the vote. And that's, I don't understand that.
Yeah, he wasn't clear about that either. So, yeah, maybe he's on the anything but Trump campaign too. I don't know.
Right.
But again, we're just trying to figure out how to get something there. Now, if we do get some tax reform, okay, if we get something, do you think begins to simplify the number of brackets, reduces, obviously, corporate tax is the most important thing economically that we can do.
Right.
But beyond that, what if we did do that, do you think that this would mean that CPAs would have to adjust the business and accounting would change? Is H&R Block going to go out of business?
You know, again, a crystal ball. But what I see is I don't think so. I think there's still a need out there for people, at least the clients and consulting that I do and the planning and proactiveness that we get involved in. There's always things we can help with, from financing and how do I make my business run better? How do I budget? How do I get to the next level? Different types of questions like that will always be there. Again, most people, good entrepreneurs, are very good at making money, very good at making money, very good at taking risks. They're willing to do it, but they're not good at keeping it in their pocket. And that can be a tax, or it can be purely just a spending mechanism that you're there and you can bring help to that need. Now, as far as simplification, if it's true reform, there will be smaller brackets, less brackets. I think right now they're in the individual side, there's seven, eight brackets right now, from 39.6 down to zero.
Right.
And so there is a need to simplify that. But then we run into questions of, if I eliminate the mortgage interest deductions, will people stop buying houses? And I think we've had that discussion a little bit.
Yeah.
So
it seems like a very hollow argument.
Right.
Yeah, like, well, I'm going to live in a tent. Really? Okay. All right, so we're going to live in a tent. Nobody's going to buy a house. Housing prices will collapse. I mean, come on. Anyway, yeah. But you're right. So you have all these constituencies out there fighting for it. Now, but at the same time, if they did simplify it, and we headed down that road, and I'm not talking about the first whack at it, okay? I mean, a million-word tax code is it's way over that now, because that's like so yesterday that we went over a million words.
Right.
Is not remotely understandable by anybody, not fully. So that's why you have, even in tax work, you have people that specialize in certain areas, right?
Correct.
So whittling that down is not maybe a process that happens like the first time, like we can all file on a postcard.
Not going to happen.
No. But maybe, what if we start down that road? and we actually kind of say step one, two, and start simplifying, whacking away, chopping away. Would it get to a point, do you think, simplistically, that we could? Not if you're running a small business, but you've got too many deductions, and you're not that you aren't going to want to know about certain write-offs and certain things that are available, because you have to depreciate equipment or not depreciate it for a certain amount of time. But all those things are important. You can't, like, well, if it's really flat, but it's not really flat, because in business you have certain deductions you have to take. But would we look at maybe less tax preparation for the average person, for middle income, lower and middle income?
Potentially, I think there could be a decline in that, just because it's simple and they don't need those, and it's easy to just go back and read the instructions and do it yourself. TurboTax is out there. It's coming along. There's a few other ones that are kind of helping in that process.
Sure.
To ask those questions. And it might be more of a consulting role like you were describing earlier. But I kind of equate it back to did the switching of trying to use India outsourcing services to bring down costs work? No. Do we go back, and this is an analogy, but did we my mom used to home cook all the time and make great meals, and today we have fast food. Did that take that away? To an extent, mm-hmm. It did, but our people, we're so fast-paced, and technology is moving so fast-paced. Most people have a hard time keeping up with that. So there are going to be other things that come into play, which I think you're suggesting is more proactive, and can I run the software, and do I file online or not, or can I, or do I understand how? I still think there's going to be a need, and I don't see it declining that much in my lifetime.
Right.
But it's getting that direction. But there's always going to be some supplemental need,
right,
that people are just not going to want to deal with. Because, quite honestly, when you go home at night sometimes, do you want to do trades, or do I want to read, tax laws? It's
yeah.
See where I'm going with that.
I do. Absolutely. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true, and you're not. You bring up a really interesting point there, too. And that is technology going to race ahead of the idiots in D.C.? It has, hasn't it? They just have to get out of the way. And maybe, even if they don't, they're just going to get run over by it.
I think they are right now. Our Internal Revenue Service is archaic. They've been hacked.
Right.
Several times.
Oh, yeah.
Cybersecurity is a huge issue, and that's going to be another battle that we find out. There's how secure are people with that process as far as doing their stuff on the cloud or online and so forth. So that adds a whole nother dynamic. We're having to do more and more just to e-file.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's to protect the taxpayer. The IRS is requiring more. And so it did shorten up our time span for a little while to do direct deposit and refunds and speed it up.
Right.
But now with all this hacking and cybersecurity issues, it's going to take a little bit longer. We're going to have to provide more information. Do we really want to give it to our government? I mean, those are some questions that are going to come out of technology that may also limit what we can do and how quickly we do it.
Good, good. All right, let's talk about some Idaho things you need to be looking to do, and I mean really seriously need to do, because they're just simple, straightforward, easy before the end of the year. But we got to take a quick break for Fox News, and when we come back, let's talk about Idaho and some of the simple tax breaks that all of us have. Hello and welcome back, and thank you for putting up with this recording, if you will. It's it's interesting. David Hutchison is here with HH and Associates talking about taxes, and I sure appreciate you taking time to do this, David.
Absolutely.
It's taxes. We were talking a little bit off air here about how, it's taxes. It's not stuff we want to deal with. We don't. We don't want to deal with it. We find it boring. We find it frustrating. I find it not frustrating. I find it flat out maddening. You just tear your hair out. I just filed a inch and a half thick tax return, 400 pages. I don't really think I'm the most complicated guy in the world. But there's not a human being on the planet without software that understands that. And they make it up. I actually wrote a check to Iowa, I think it was. No, Illinois, Indiana. Indiana for $1. Now, that brings up one quick question, okay, before we dive into the rest of this. Because I thought you didn't have to send in if your bill was less than 10 bucks or something like that.
There are specifics, but they also get down to if it's a buck, they round you up. You know, the cents thing used to come into play, but with computers, it's more to rounding. So if it's a dollar, they generally, most states are going to require you to pay it in. It's a sad thing. We try to watch for it. But more often than not, if we can avoid filing, and their requirements are so low for non-residents because of all these publicly traded partnerships and so forth. So every state is squirming to get some kind of revenues going. So right now, after the recession, they are still looking for every dollar, so to speak.
Yeah, well, they always are. Government's always looking for more. I've always said this, and I really believe it to be true. Even if somehow the government won the $10 trillion lottery, we would still be, okay, $20 trillion, whatever, we would still be in debt immediately the next year. It wouldn't make any difference at all. We may have 1 year, but the pig would just eat more, and it always does.
I agree with that statement.
It just eats more. Government, by design, eats more, and so does local government.
Right.
It just eats a little bit less than the big pig does. But nonetheless, the pigs eat. Now, we get to that point, though, again, where we want to talk about our local little pig, Idaho. So we promised, if you will, in the last segment, that we'd talk about, these are very specific things between now and the end of the year that people should pay attention to and are worth pretty significant dollars, even to an average taxpayer, right?
Yeah. Idaho has its own little tax items that people often overlooked. And I'm really surprised that when I have a potential new client or somebody come in with some questions and I look at their Idaho return, and there are a few simple things. And one of them is giving to any Idaho school. If you're charitably inclined and you're doing donations, then one of the things you should consider is that you can give to any Idaho school and get a itemized deductions, federal and state. And then for state, you get what they call an education credit. So up to a certain threshold, they don't let that go too far. But, you know, if you gave $2,000 in cash on a married filing joint return to Boise State University, because let's say you like them, it's where you went to school.
Right.
And so you get the $2,000 donation deduction, and then you can get up to $1,000 Idaho credit on your Idaho individual income tax return. Now, remember, that's not a deduction. That's a credit. It's as though you wrote a check to Idaho State Tax Commission. It reduces tax dollar for dollar.
So in this case, you give two, you really only, it costs you one, not including the deduction you get from the federal government.
Yeah, it's a three-quarter return.
Yes, yeah.
Really, is what it is.
Up to what dollar amount?
The maximum on a married filing joint return is $2,000. That's
okay,
the maximum.
Singles, $1,000.
$1,000, correct.
Okay, so it's half for thing. Now, you were careful to say cash when
yes.
you said that. So this has to be a check?
It has to be a check. They used to go with the non-cash donations, but relevancy comes in as how much are books worth anymore, to be honest with you. Technology and Kindles and your library books, you know, those donations and fair market value. It just got abused too much, Dave. And I think that
Wait, my junk isn't worth a fortune? Come on.
And so they just, to eliminate everything, they said, let's just make it cash on that particular one.
Okay. Now, is that inclusive? So that's the education credit. But
right.
I know there's others, and I want to wrap those in as like Idaho Youth Ranch, ARC, things like that. Is that the same credit or not?
Different credit. It's an additional credit. So, and it can be cash or non-cash.
Okay, that's where I can overvalue my garbage.
That's what happens. Okay. That's the abuse. But
anymore, my bag of dirty clothes is worth a gazillion dollars.
The thing Idaho's done there, though, is there's a second credit, which is called the Rehabilitation Contribution Credit. And what it's limited to is a $400 total value and a $200 credit for a married filing joint return. So it's significantly less and has less ability, I think, to be abused from that standpoint.
It's just lower dollars. But still, it's $200 credit.
Absolutely.
Now, is this available to all taxpayers? I mean, is this like this is only for poor taxpayers that don't pay any taxes anyway, so there's no real write-off? Or do rich people also get to write it off?
Even if you don't itemize deductions, you still qualify for the credit if you give to those organizations. So if you owe Idaho tax, these are donations or credits you may want to take a look at.
Interesting. Now, but to get the deduction, on the other side, you do have to itemize.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. But, again, these are tax credits, dollar for dollar.
Yes.
So, big difference. Very significant difference. Yeah. So, now, but again, on the other side, so it's like the donation play, the thrift stores, if you will, type of thought process, that those there are you can give away things that does not require cash.
Yes.
Okay. And that's a $200 per person up to $400 in the household.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Okay. What else then?
Well, the other item I see most that doesn't show up on the Idaho return is what they call the capital gains deduction for Idaho. Now, that's typically if you sell a piece of investment property, real estate, and you've held it for long-term capital gains, 12 months and one day, and it's in Idaho, and you sell that piece of property, that capital gain on your Idaho side, you get a 60% capital gain deduction.
Mm.
That's overlooked a lot. I see it a lot because I have a lot of investors in real estate in Idaho, so I deal with it a lot. But I'm surprised how many people overlook that.
But it's Idaho only, and it's real property only.
Well, yes. It doesn't work on stocks
right.
or intangibles. And a lot of where when I'm reviewing a client tax return, where I see it is a husband and wife come in together, and the husband's works at Micron, for example, or something like that, and sold stock, has capital gains, and is taking that capital gain deduction on there. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to help you. I'm actually going to cost you tax.
Right.
And the wife goes, I told you we should have been in here.
They think they have it. But again, it's not on. But it's not on real property outside of Idaho either.
Correct.
It has to be only here.
Right. It's Idaho. There are a few minuscule details in there for others like farming, mining, and so manufacturing, but we don't see those a lot. But it is, there are some devils in the details, Dave. Like with every tax law, you got to take a look at it. You got to look at your options and see if you qualify.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Anything else on the Idaho front when we wrap up this segment?
No, I think those are the three big items that I normally see. There are a few other things. Alternative energy, if you have a wood stove and you want to bring it up to EPA standards, there's a $5,000 deduction they allow you to take over 5 years.
Oh.
It's an extra deduction. Everybody should be aware that, you know, Social Security benefits are a subtraction. And the other quick one is your Idaho College Savings Account.
Okay.
Now, that used to be in 16 and prior was $4,000 limitation on a deduction for single $8,000 married filing joint. 2017, that went up to $6,000 single and $12,000 married filing joint for the maximum deduction.
That's great. And again, available at all tax brackets.
Correct.
Gotcha. That's very important because we obviously think that the IDEAL program is a terrific low-cost help for education.
Absolutely,
that would
yes.
go up to a much, well, really, 50% is a pretty good increase from 4 to 6,000 or, as you pointed out, 8 to 12.
So right.
That's a nice break. All right, we got to take a quick break. We got much more to talk about coming up in our final segment. I hope you'll stick around. Hello and welcome to the special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and I'm here with David Hutchison with HH & Associates Accounting. Accounting and consulting, really. I mean, you guys certainly, you know, I switched over to you guys this past year, and have been very, very happy. And this isn't a big commercial for you, although I'm happy that you guys are sponsors of this program. But it's interesting to me in dealing with a large professional organization like yours, how many things are different than just having a tax preparation. You know, I may be required to spend a few more minutes with you, which is great, because you now understand my situation better. I am given information to think about, things like this particular tax break that you and I've talked about, which I always think of as a swamp, but that would be D.C. But where you take easement, scenic easements, things like that. But those are very, very detailed and difficult areas, and are for people that are doing pretty well. This isn't for an average low-end tax bracket.
Right.
But that's not what you're targeting when you're talking about a CPA. It's not simple tax preparation.
Right. Yeah. What we're looking for and what we pride ourselves in is problem solving. Now, when you get to the larger tax returns or the more money, taxable income, I take a simple example because I listen to the news all the time and I hear what everybody else is hearing, right? It's the rich keep getting richer. I deal with some people who make a good amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to try to keep that, we take a simple example. If somebody makes $70,000 a year, they're probably in a marginal rate, federal and state, somewhere around 20%.
Yep.
You look at someone who makes $140,000 a year, double the income, but they're at a 30% marginal rate, I'm just throwing out equal to equal mm-hmm. here. Their tax result is more than double than what their income spread is.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear the rich keep getting richer, and as you go up the ladder, it gets even worse because your marginal rates get as high as 50%. The phase outs, the 39.6% top rate, and the state. I mean, you look at California's 13%.
Yeah. Well, even Idaho's over 50.
Yeah.
Most of the people, me included, are self-employed. So we pay both sides of Social Security as well.
Exactly. And so what we try to do is we sit there and go, okay, how can we help you? How can we find things? And to be honest with you, people think that tax code is just full of these things for those types of situations. It's not.
Right.
You're in the same dynamic. Is it economically makes sense for you to spend a dollar to save, put 60 cents in your pocket and spend 40 for taxes, or to turn around and spend a dollar to save 40 cents?
Right.
And so what we've been able to do is there's some strategies. They're very complicated, but structured right and done properly, they're totally legitimate for that level. So if I have someone paying 50% marginal rate and I can save them $100,000 in taxes, they can use that to create other opportunities, which most of them do, by the way. Most of them are looking at how can I reinvest my money
right.
to continue to grow, create jobs, create investments. And so I look at it as a positive. If I can come to the table with a specific program like we've talked about, and I'd be happy to meet with people on it, is it allows an exponential donation deduction.
Right.
And with that, we can save a lot more in taxes. And I think it's very appropriate at those levels. If you have someone that's been paying 50% for 20, 25 years, it wears on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
So
I can attest to that. It does wear on you. And I've got a good buddy who is a very close friend of mine who just actually expressed that to their own accountant who's retiring this coming year. But it's like, well, frankly, I'm just sick of it. And he is. And that's one of the reasons also that he's going to be leaving his profession sooner than later. Because
right.
it does wear you out. What am I working for if I don't even get to keep half? And that is frustrating. And I know it's frustrating for people on the low end as well, trying to make ends meet. But it is it's a frustration with only half the people in the country paying taxes at all. Isn't it something like 1% of the people pay 35% of the taxes, or has it gone up to 40 now?
I can find statistics that probably make it worse than that. But yeah, that's true.
Well, that seems ridiculous. 1% of the people pay a third or more than a third of all the taxes. It used to be 5 paid 55, okay? But that I know has gotten up to 60% or higher.
Right.
Is that much higher than 60 now or not?
I think it is. There's a lot of money that's being made out there, and there's a lot of sideline cash right now. But the reality of it is there's still your top 1 to 5% that are just – we can't even fathom it. It's the lottery.
Yes.
But they pay a lot in taxes. Income, you've got to factor in every tax. Income
right.
taxes, the sales taxes, property taxes. I mean,
because they're all doing all that.
Yes.
They're the ones that are creating everything.
Correct.
And they are, yeah. So you're right. It does. You factor all in. But even if you're looking at simple income tax, 50% is where you're at.
Yeah.
In the highest brackets.
Exactly. And it's very difficult for somebody in the risk that they take. If we sit back and say, okay, what risk comparison do you have if somebody makes $100,000 a year versus somebody who makes $1 million a year?
Mm-hmm.
They take on a significant amount of risk. And it may be multiple small businesses creating multiple jobs.
Yep.
And they pay 50% back.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Even as they're creating so much general economic development.
Right.
All right, I can go on all day and get on this big soapbox about how wrong it is and how everybody needs to pay something, anything. All right. David Hutchison, thank you so much for joining us today.
Appreciate hey, thank it. You for having me.
If anybody has any comments or questions, give us your phone number real quick.
It's 208-229-8100.
229-8100. Okay, great. David Hutchison with HH & Associates, thanks for the year-end tax tips. I know there's more. There are a few things more, but we'll certainly get to those in future segments.
Be happy to.
Thanks again.
Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And of course, these are my opinions only. Not this station, a broker dealer, anything like that. And if we talk about a stock, and I'm sure we will, it doesn't mean you should own it. We're not here to tell you to buy or sell or do anything silly. And everybody doesn't need to own some individual stock that they know nothing about. It's how, if you will, you can have a bad experience in an otherwise relentlessly higher move in the market. Welcome to Hour Number 2. What a week we had. And thank you again for putting up with the recording. I obviously have had some travels here lately. And last week I was in Chicago for a conference. And It's a funny thing. You go to these conferences and you spend hours all day long listening to one manager, one thought provoking, you know, whether it's an economist or, you know, some academic talking about something to do with the markets. In this case, their keynote speaker was talking about aging and all the amazing developments and how many things are happening so fast we can't really keep up with them. And all the little happy circumstances that have come up, you know, while they're studying one thing and they discover another completely unrelated to what they were looking for, but ends up saving lives. Things like that that just happen routinely in medicines and healthcare. But it's astounding when we think about where the future is and if we can even stay alive for a few more years, how much the barriers are being pushed back in so many ways, from cancer and gene therapies and so on. These are going to create enormous problems, there's no doubt. No doubt. And I'll talk about some of these in the future, but problems, yes. But the way we tend to look at things as humans, I find, I don't know, almost distressing, really, is that people living a long time is a massive problem, and that's the way we see it. That's the way we talk about it. Rather than, isn't that amazing what a blessing it is to have such a long, healthy life, to have 60-year-olds running around like 40-year-olds used to, or 30 even, not too many generations ago. And the potential of 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds acting like 60-year-olds. It's an amazing thing. It's stunning. And pushing these boundaries back is going to change things in so many ways. But the idea that it's bad is crazy, right? It's all good. It's all good. We are just going to have to deal with and figure out a way to make Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid work in an environment that nobody planned for that kind of longevity. We're already dealing with that, and it's getting worse because the politicians won't do anything about it. They don't want to. We've watched administration after administration do nothing, absolutely nothing, not even carry the question out. What are we going to do? So all of these things are going to become a problem. But that's why I think that if I want to talk about this today, which I do, is how we just miss so many positive things. We miss all the blessings. We miss that. And it causes us to step aside, not invest, live in fear. And we watch a week like this. We watch a day or 2 days this week where we just watch the market explode higher. Just explode higher. When it was too high thousands of points ago, it was too high. And of course, you know, you're going to, it's just a bubble. It's not a bubble. It's too high. But is it? Is it really too high? Is the market too high as compared to cash? Is the market too high compared to a 2.3 10-year treasury? Gold is not even an asset class, so whatever. Does this make any sense to miss this? Because when we do that, when we start putting labels on things, this is all bad. It's not going to get better. This is the worst whatever, the bubble that was created by the Federal Reserve, all of the fill-in-the-blank things of why the market's going to go down, why it's going to crash, why it's too high. And we don't learn the lessons. We continue to try to time it, don't we? How many thousands of points ago were we listening to whoever talk about the market being too high? Remember Shiller, the Shiller Index, the Shiller P.E. ratio is then at all-time highs. At all-time highs, at all-time highs, for thousands of points. What good is that? You see, when we sit there and we think about a 5% move in the market, or you know, which is we haven't even had this year. Crazy, isn't it? But they happen all the time. But that's what we are going to be worried about and miss this? That's why so much money, that's why Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch, and all the others say you can't time the market. You can't. That's why they have all said in various ways more money is lost predicting the next market correction than was ever lost in any correction. Yeah, you know what? If you're sitting it out and been sitting it out for thousands of points, you'll keep sitting it out. I don't know why I bother. If you want to live in a world of doom and gloom, you're going to. If that's what you believe the world is. If that's what you believe that you have to do is try to figure out in time something that's just gone up your whole life. If you think you have to play the little squiggle game, the ins and outs to make it work, I guess you'll keep doing that. But that's really sad. It not only adds a lot of anxiety and tension to your life, it's something you can't do. And people have lost millions, billions, and trillions of dollars doing it. But don't worry, the purveyors of doom and gloom, they continue to make boatloads of money telling their doom and gloom stories. It's what they do. We don't have to do that. And if we learn the lessons of what this market has done. And I don't just mean this year. The year before. And before. And the year before that. When the market was too high. And we had real deal worries about Europe, part one, two, three, and four. When QE ends, it did. The market's going to tank. You remember all of that? Where are all those folks? Now, on to the next thing. Just ask Stansberry Research. One doom and gloom thing after the other, month after month, year after year. But mark my words, if the market goes down 10%, there'll be like banner headlines called that one. We have to really take a step back and think about it. How do you think about it? Look, if you need money out of the market, I fully expect a correction. Don't you? At any time? I mean at any time, any year, any time. Not now. Not particularly now. Not more now than later. Not more now than 6 months ago. Uh-uh. Not at all. You have to expect it all the time because they come all the time. But you see, that's not a reason to move things around or to fuss over. They're inevitable, certain to occur over and over again all the days of your life. So why fuss? Why would you? And we shouldn't. But this week, this explosion higher on what? On vapor? On air? No, this was on earnings. Earnings. Corporate earnings. As Larry Kudlow calls it, the mother's milk of the market. Corporate profits. And it is. And we lose sight. These are real businesses changing the world. We use all of their products. They make boatloads of money. What's bubble-ish about that? Nothing is. I expect a correction. You should too. All the time. And so when we think about managing money, we don't think about it from a standpoint of, yeah, we need to be raising a lot of cash. You do. You do. Strategically, for example, right now, we know at year end, this is going to be a big distribution year, right? Mutual funds, good year, lots of money made, right? So we know that lots and lots and lots of distributions will be paid out this year. Knowing that means that we know the client portfolios will be flush with cash in December. So those that need income, they've got a lot of income coming, no matter what the market does. But if you need money over the next year, what a gift an all-time high is. Take it. That's the only market timing you should ever be doing. Ever. I'm going to need this money out in the next year or two. Now looks like a good time. That's the market timing. That's the market timing. What's the best thing that we've done for our clients since the Great Recession, even before that? Stay the course and do nothing year after year. But playing games. Either accept you can time or you can't. You have to not play that in-between line. For example, what I'm trying to say is, for me, long, long ago, you know, as you've listened a long time, you know that John Templeton is just a hero of mine. I mean, he's a mentor. I got to meet him a couple of times, but he didn't know me from a stick. But I read everything he wrote, thought about everything he said. And he said, and Warren Buffett said, Michael Price said, Peter Lynch has said, Davis has said, the list goes on. You can't time the market. So either you think you're smarter than all those people, you really do, because you have to carry that kind of arrogance, because they all say the same thing, you can't time it. So you believe you're smarter than they are, have figured out the secret sauce, or, like me, you accept that that is an investment truth, period. Period. This is an investment truth. I cannot, no matter what I think, no matter what I perceive, no matter what is entering into my thought, I cannot time this. So don't go there. You either accept that or you don't. And investing is really, really hard when you don't. Really hard. And then you get periods like this that just defy all of your own logic. But what a great lesson, right? I mean, aren't all-time highs great? Except if you're out. They are great. They're great for the economy. They're just plain great. And instead of trying to make so much mess of it, I don't know, it's really here, it's really there, it's really only a couple of stocks, it's really narrow here. No, it's not. It's rotating around. It's only in the financials. Yeah, that was last week. Now it happens to be tech stuff. I mean, it just rotates around, but you hear everybody, all the Eeyores out there. Yeah, but it's an all-time high. It's awesome. There's never been this much wealth in the world. The economy, as we saw just yesterday, surging again, over 3% growth. I mean, we are accelerating now, and we still don't even have corporate tax reform. Incredible. Incredible. That's the big backdrop. That's the big picture. This market rally has been driven by corporate profits. It's been driven by the boatloads of money that have to be invested somewhere. And in a zero interest rate world, those options are few. And the best option always has been stocks. Why we are surprised, I don't know. Why would you be surprised when an investment has done so well for your entire life, your parents' lives, your grandparents' lives, better than anything else? Why be surprised when it goes to all-time highs? Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Give us a call or shoot us an email. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, I'm looking forward to several weeks here where I'm back in studio, no travels, and settling in. We'll get on our education series again. So many things have kind of piled up here that I really do want to talk about. You know, last week, again, I was at a conference, and it had so many great speakers about really everything. I mean, these are just top-notch money managers. I don't want to mention what company because then I've got to give all the silly disclosures and all. But I mean people that have absolutely destroyed the index. But what is fascinating about that is they destroy it over long periods of time, but not every year. That's just not how it works. And this always distorts our mind. It really does. I mean, one of the examples that I want to give you is that these happen to be highly rated funds, Morningstar funds, right? So, you know, you think about that, you know, oh, they have a 4-star, they've got a 5-star, they must be really good. And people do use it all the time as some kind of a predictor, if you will, of what the market's going, or which mutual funds are really great and going to do better. In other words, who are the smartest people? Well, it must be the guys that have 4 or 5-star ratings, right? And the answer is, the Wall Street Journal just did a fascinating piece. I believe it was Thursday, on how bad a predictor that is. I mean, it was one of those huge, if you will, like two full pages articles that of all the 5-star funds, the very best, only 14% 3 years later, 14% are 5-star funds. If anything, it's a predictor of future failure. Now, that's a stunning thought, because advisors use Morningstar ratings to help them pick funds, let alone retail investors. Now, we've talked about this in the past, but nobody's ever done a big study like this that actually breaks it out, that actually says this: picking 5-star Morningstar funds is a really, really, really bad idea, because their chance of future success is so small. Now, how's that for a bumper sticker, right? That's a tough one. Needless to say, I'm sure that Morningstar is scrambling to figure out what their answer to that is. Oh, it's a starting place. We think people have to do lots of investing. And they just hope it goes away. Because here's the reality of it. If Morningstar's ratings are so abysmal for determining whether you should be buying a fund or not, why does Morningstar exist? That's what they do, is rate mutual funds. So you can see that, but the point is how, I'm not here to bash Morningstar. I'm here to say things don't work in a straight line. So many managers have tough periods of time where they underperform. But over a long period, which that's what everybody says they're buying their investments for, even though we don't act that way, when we buy them for the long term, and you think something over a 3-year period is doing poorly or well, that is not the type of short thinking you should have. And many of these funds perform poorly. They all do. I'll give you some statistics. Anyway, we're going to talk a lot about this and much more over the coming weeks in our education series. Right now, please do give us a call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. Any questions, comments, please shoot those over anytime at PetsoFinancial.com. We also have articles and calculators to help you with your own financial planning, as well as podcasts from previous programs. You know, it's interesting. Again, when you go and you just kind of submerge yourself into days of, you know, money talk, if you will, that you can't help but just be sitting there filled with all of this, just thoughts banging around your head. And then and often, though, I've noticed, right, you don't stop and think. The world's so fast, right? We just kind of remove from one thing to the other that I think, if you will, the art of contemplation is dying. I mean, we just don't sit around and think anymore, do we? We all think we think, but we're not thinking, right? We're just kind of like moving from one social thing to the next and seeing what the heck's going on. Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't stop and think. And it's interesting when you just kind of get, that's the huge benefit, if you will, going off to a conference. You just, you go in and you got nothing to do except sit there and listen to people, really smart people, talk. talk money, talk the economy, talk, you know, what's going on in the world of longevity. How are we going to make money last long enough for people? All of these things that are big, big questions that we don't often stop and think about. And so I'm sitting there at O'Hare, you know, waiting for a flight, you know, and you know, you're just sitting there. I've got over an hour before the flight goes, right? So I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking, you know, what the heck? That was good stuff this week, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I start thinking about, just in general, how difficult we make this game of finance, this game of investing, if you will. And it just dawned on me. So I'm just sitting there thinking. I pull out a pad of paper and I write this down. Stocks have outperformed every other investment by so far, there's nothing even close. Nothing. Nothing is even close. Okay? It's just not arguable that cash has done remotely as close, that bonds have done okay. They have not. Real estate is a distant, 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 distant. They're not even close. They're not on the same planet. And then I start thinking about stocks in general. Why is it so hard for people to own stocks? Why do they think of it like, I mean, why do we let people, like they are a couple hours from now, going to talk about it being a Wall Street casino or something? Like, you just never know what's going to happen in the long term, except it always goes up in the long term. It never goes away. And we let people lie to us about, you know, you can have market returns with no risk. No, you can't. You don't get that. Is that how it works? But you already know that, so I don't need to go there. But we let that stuff come in. We try to find magic products instead of just thinking about it. So here's the deal. It's return more than anything else. Nothing's close. It's highly liquid. Poor people can own it. Like, you don't have to have hardly any money. You can put $50 a month in, and you can be an investor. I'm not kidding. In a diversified portfolio, even. It's super cheap to buy. There's hardly even any transaction costs. You have no responsibility as a business owner. They don't even want to hear from you. You're not allowed to show up and help. You have no conviction in that at all. Full liquidity, virtually no cost. There's one cost, one thing. One negative. Only one. I mean, think of that whole weight on the scale. It's not just returns. It's everything else you would want in an investment. I mean, I can get out anytime. Mm-hmm. No cost? Uh-huh. Virtually none. Huh. Yeah, I don't need a lot of money to do this? No. How many hours do I have to spend, like, running a business? None. Okay, that sounds pretty weirdly good. It is. What's the one thing? We have to put up with temporary price movements. That's it. Temporary declines in price. That's the price you pay. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Jim, hang on. I'm going to get to you right after this break. We're going to take a quick break. Leave plenty of time for your phone calls. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. You know, it really is astounding, isn't it? Think about that. You have all of this, like, on a scale, right? Should I be an investor or not? Am I too old? Am I this? Am I that? Right? You hear it all the time. Is the market too high? Blah, blah, blah. We sit and contemplate nonsense. Nonsense. We worry about things to make sure that we don't do the right thing, which is invest. Get out of our own way and stay invested. All this other stuff is just noise. noise. They think about that, right? Returns that are so far in excess of anything else. You can't even see second place. Liquid. Available for all people. Low cost. You know, you got it, right? And then we fuss and make sure that we have issues. Crazy. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for holding, man. Go ahead.
How you doing, Dave?
I'm well. Thank you, sir.
Anyway, I got to call you out on something finally. You were talking about how you think we don't think, and I agree we don't think. Okay, now don't you draw or do you draw a correlation between all the technology that you love that we have created to think for us and the fact that we don't think?
Yeah, I think there is. I also think that we're distracted with all the moving pictures, right, if you will.
I mean, you're right. I mean, TV, yeah. Radio, and it's true. I mean, things move. I mean, I used to be into videotaping, like weddings or whatever, you know, putting videotapes together. And now you see a show, and it's like our attention spans are minuscule.
They are. They are. It's one of the things, actually, you know, you look at this, and I think it's a massive problem in society. The attention span is so short, right?
Right.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult. But on top of that, too, it spills over not just for attention and thinking, okay, but it spills over into our hyperactivity with investments.
Okay.
Right. It's we are seeing a shorter and shorter attention span,
well,
if you will.
It's the one of a quick buck.
Exactly. So people are now, they're thinking long term. They say long term, and I'm not sure if they mean long term, like as in between now and the end of the year, am I going to get $1 million? Or are we talking about now in retirement, right?
Right.
I mean, we always were on the same page before. Long term is long term. It's like the rest of my life, and then I want my kids to inherit. But, you know, I want them to have a better, all that stuff that we have all thought about at the greatest generation. But now it's so fast, and I think all of this the videotape, the speed of movies that are made now is like they don't have, you don't take a long time. Like, think of an Alfred Hitchcock movie, right?
Right.
And all that setting and all the suspense building up. You could never do that. Nobody would watch a movie like that these days because,
you know,
it moves
well, that's
too
our shortcoming.
Slow.
That's our shortcoming as human beings, whether it's alcohol or technology. We don't know when to stop. I mean, everything in moderation, but we get in too much into technology, and we let technology do everything for us. Yesterday, you know, Kevin, I mean, he goes out to those schools.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times he'll go, for instance, to Capitol High School, you know, and there'll be a band or a choir in the background, blah, 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 right? Well, the one he went to yesterday was a charter school, and all they talked about the entire time were robots. All they did were program robots. No music, you know. I mean, I think that's not good.
Right, right, right. Well, we know technology is going to change everything, and we have to play. You can't not play.
No, but I'm
no
just saying it's
for example,
dangerous.
Not,
and we shouldn't say, isn't this, you know, this is the best thing since peanut butter, you know.
No, I understand it's not, and I understand we have to really think this through. Is it really okay that humans and computers, robots, have their brains connected? Is it, because that's where we're going? I mean, this is not that far in the future now. Artificial intelligence replacing almost every job that there is as we know right now. So is that going to be the case? Are we going to actually go see a doctor of all things? Or are we just going to talk to Watson? And he's going to diagnose what's wrong with us. And all of these things are great, and they are. Isn't it great that people live longer, healthier lives? But at the same time, it does affect the speed of life, this pace that we live at.
I'll give you a real quick example, you know, concerning, you know, the medical deal. I was watching this station, wasn't yours, another one. But, I mean, they were interviewing this doctor. And he was, well, first off, they said, is there anything, you know, bad about home remedies? And he wanted to say they're evil. But he said, well, a lot of them can be dangerous. Then they got into the flu. And he said he was worried about contagion of the flu. You know, he's saying somebody should stay home, not spreading the flu. Well, anyway, and I brought up that I called in later and brought that up. Not once did that doctor say what you should do while you're at home. You should rest. You should drink orange juice. You know, doctors don't do that, you know, because, you know, take a pill, take a shot. I mean, he not once said what you should do trying to get over the cold while you're at home with the flu.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, that's the problem. You've got to have some human common sense. And you've said yourself, your grandmother, who never got through the eighth grade, well, my grandmother knew how to take care of the flu.
Right. And my grandmother did get through the eighth grade, but yeah, you understand. We really don't think things through very well.
Bedside manner and all that. Humanity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What we need, in addition to whatever computers we have, so that they're just not reading readouts from computers, they're actually talking to the patient.
Exactly. All right.
So now that I've brightened your day, have a nice weekend.
Yeah, and you do the same. You go brighten somebody else's now. Have a good one.
I'm still invested, and now I've got to save cash to pay. This will be the first time I'll have to pay taxes since I can't remember. I've run out of capital loss carry forward.
Well, that's a good thing, actually, because you're actually supposed to make money doing this. That's a good thing.
That's what they tell me, but it's still painful.
I know. It is. Paying taxes never feels good. Jim, have a good day now.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's go to Paul. Paul, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Hey, I just, the man you had on earlier talking about taxes, I have a question. He said, any school in Idaho, you can take an education credit. Now, does that include Christian schools?
Yes. And any accredited school, you can.
Accredited school. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
To my knowledge, I don't think it makes any difference at all. And it does have to remember on this particular one, it's not, you can't give them your junk. Okay. And get the credit,
correct.
The Idaho credit. This is cash. It has to be cash.
Right.
Okay.
Got to pay money. So you just get a receipt from the school and you're in good shape.
You got it. And then it's a credit, half, I think it's a 50% credit. That applies to libraries, schools, higher education as well. So, okay.
Cool. And I got one other kind of a larger question.
Mm-hmm.
Our national budget. They do baseline budgeting, right?
Right.
Why do they do that, where they get an increase every year no matter what? How come they don't operate like a good business?
Because it's government. It's government.
How could
politics...
Could that be changed somehow?
Sickness. Is it what now? Say that again.
Could that be changed to where they get X amount for their budget, and then if they spend less a little bit, then they got a surplus for the next year, kind of like a business rather than this 7.5% or something increase every year, no matter what they
you do. Know. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and it actually gets more even worse than that. They consider a budget cut. I mean, I just love this, right? They're all the Democrats who have voted for $1 trillion per year deficit. Right, are now
right.
Budget hawks. Now all of a sudden it's
absolutely.
Like, you know, it's unbelievable to me. I mean, it's unbelievable. In fact, the hypocrisy is so bad in D.C. that they don't find any shame in it at all. I mean, none. This doesn't matter to them. But that's exactly what they're talking about right now. And here's the deal. But here's what they've been doing for years. They're telling you that if you vote for this particular change in, say, Medicare or Medicaid, that you're pushing grandma off a cliff, right? Remember those commercials?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reality was, trying to tie those in, and they called them budget cuts. They aren't cuts. They were cuts in the increase that was projected. So when we get something and it's supposed to go up 5, let's say it's 5%, we're going to get a 5% increase in it next year. If we only get 3, I don't know on what planet that is a cut. But that is a cut to them.
Exactly.
So it is very frustrating.
It's political speak. It's a way to twist it.
Mm-hmm.
They're still getting an increase. I mean, we're still increasing our deficit in the budget.
Correct.
And
correct.
If
and
they were held money accountable, if they were held accountable to what they're supposed to, if they ran it more like a business, we would be way better off.
Well, of course we would be, when you get politics in and people are just simply trying to be reelected. And you know, there's nothing wrong with trying to get reelected, but there is something wrong with politics when people don't really care about the country. They really don't care what the best policy is for your children and grandchildren. They don't care if you're running out of money. They don't care about
anything
except getting reelected. When the largest
concern is getting reelected rather than...
Yep.
Doing everything else that they should be doing, that's when it becomes a
problem. Well, you know, in my opinion, too, is that if you go about doing the right thing, you're going to get reelected. You know,
exactly.
You just are. You just really are. It's just something that actually happens. And when we have all of this political welfare and things like that, politics has got to be in a very dishonorable profession now. And it really wasn't that way. Not when I was a kid. There were real statesmen. They were real people that worked very hard and were proud to be the senators and congressmen, not just power mongers and trying to get rich off of their position. You know, they made money outside of D.C. And it just isn't the case anymore. So it's full of corruption, lobbyists, and corporate welfare, and that is a very sad state. And I'm hopeful that... you know, it drives me nuts. Listen, watching this guy tweet and getting into bar fights. I'm hoping it'll drain the swamp.
Shows like this, like yours, and some of the stuff that Kevin does, and that is, we need to educate people so they understand, so they can vote and get it changed, because that's the way our government works.
Well, I appreciate that. So, it does work that way, and we are seeing. I hope. I really believe we are seeing this. We are seeing a dawn of a new time where people that are not in politics are getting elected.
Right.
That's amazing. I mean, it's astounding, and it has actually gone global. You know, we don't talk about it very much, but Brexit was one of those things right there. People were tired of being governed out of a foreign country, and they were sick of it and voted against it. What happened in France, of all places, is that the left and the far left got wiped out. The news, because it doesn't fit the narrative.
There's a guy in Austria. Who's the guy in Austria? Austria, was it, that just got elected?
Exactly. Same thing.
He's a conservative, you know, young man. So,
He was a businessman. He was a businessman out of Austria. And, you know, this is crazy. He wasn't from a political family. But that's what's driving D.C. crazy, is Donald Trump can't be there. That's not right. He's not one of us.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he is. I don't know if he's one of anybody. But the point is that he came from nowhere, and that is incredible. And this is not a U.S. phenomenon. It is a global phenomenon. And that is exciting to me, because nothing good happens in Washington, D.C., absolutely nothing. It's nonproductive. It sucks the life out of everything, and it sucks our freedom away. So when we do make movements away from that, it excites me very much. Donald Trump is a nutty guy. There's no question about it. He does it really different. But we all should hope he can drain that swamp, regardless of your politics. Hey,
absolutely.
I got to go, buddy. Thanks for the call.
So do
Thanks,
I. Paul. Take care, Dave.
All right. Have a great rest of the day. And we are out of here. Again, we're going to be here for a full 2 hours next week, back in studio, and looking forward to talking with you then. Everybody, I hope you have a great weekend.